May is National Bike Month. Are you inspired to try a longer ride? No matter how far you plan to go, do you have questions about getting your bike ready for the road? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about bicycle touring and maintenance are Tri-State Trails Communications and Events Manager Caitlin Sparks, Mobo volunteer bike mechanic Fraser Cunningham, and long-distance cyclists Vlad Holikoff and Barrett Smith. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Hey, thanks for inviting us.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Great to have you in our new building. We've got almost all the chairs filled. It's very exciting. Caitlin, let's start out by talking about the difference between bike packing and bike touring.
Yeah, this is a very subtle difference, and maybe only for like the nerdiest of bike nerds.
We'll go there. We'll go there.
So let's go there. I would say that bike touring covers both bike packing and all sorts of bike travel. You're just carrying your stuff on your bike, getting from one place to another, long distance sometimes. And bike packing, I think it's like maybe a more specialty. Natural surface trails are sometimes part of the destination. Your luggage looks a little bit different. It's like perhaps more aero, fits on the bike a little bit more snug. Whereas like bike touring, you have sometimes some heavier like panniers, which are like saddlebags on the side of the bike. And it's often, yeah, bike touring, I think with the panniers is oftentimes on paved surfaces as well. So yeah, very subtle difference, but yeah. I think, yeah, the bike packing stuff tends to be on some natural surface trails.
I see. And are bike packers typically people who are going to camp too while they're doing their thing?
I would say yes. Yeah. I think I see my friends shaking their heads. Yes. Yeah. They're all going to be camping.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Vlad, I'm going to go to you. Tell us about your most ambitious long distance rides. I know the three of you, not Fraser, no offense, Fraser, you're not part of the long distance friend club right here in this, on this, around this table. What are some of the most ambitious rides you've done?
I think there was only one ride, and like, it was, I would say ambitious, but we also agreed that we're never going to do that format again.
But this sounds like a good story.
Yeah, we rode all the way from here, Cincinnati, to Washington, D.C. And Barry can tell probably for sure. I'm not really remember. I think it was 8 days, 9 days.
It was 9 days.
9 days.
Nine days. And what does that look like, Barrett? I mean, are you on highways? Like, what roads are you taking?
Yeah. So Vlad does a wonderful job of planning our routes around lower stress routes. So we'll sometimes have to use state routes briefly, but there's a lot of farm roads that we can use that are very low traffic to get across states. And then actually there's a natural surface trail from Pittsburgh all the way to D.C. So I think the most ambitious part of this trip for me was Pittsburgh, because I had getting from here to Pittsburgh, because I'd mentioned to Vlad one morning over coffee that I thought it would be great to do the trail that goes from Pittsburgh to D.C. And I was like, I just need to figure out logistics. Like, how am I going to get home from Pittsburgh if I take the train to D.C., bike from D.C. to Pittsburgh, how do I get home? And Vlad just looks at me and he goes,
why don't we just bike to Pittsburgh?
And I said, yeah, we should just bike to Pittsburgh. Yeah.
And this is why you don't talk over coffee with Vlad about these things? is this the lesson?
No, we still do. And the next question out of Vlad's mouth was, okay, well, when do you want to do it? And sure enough, like 6 weeks later, we're both leaving our homes on our way to Pittsburgh and then on to D.C. So,
wow.
Yeah, that was a really good trip. Yeah. I would definitely recommend everybody to like skip the way to Pittsburgh. Just do Pittsburgh to D.C. it's way more cool. It's like, it's really beautiful route. It's really popular. It's like former railroad, and has a lot of like tunnels, bridges, and you just bike there. It's a trail, like no cars, nothing. It's all yours. It's so good.
And is it hilly? Pittsburgh's a pretty hilly place.
Getting to Pittsburgh was a little bit hilly, but since it's a railroad, it's not really like, it's constant climb a little bit, then you go down, but it's like, it's less than 2%.
Okay.
So it's not really terrible. It's really good.
So Vlad, how do you go about planning for these kinds of trips? Are there like websites or apps that are especially designed for people who want to do something like bicycle from Cincinnati to Pittsburgh and then to DC?
I mean, there are. I would say like in general, I think there's like a rule. Don't make your route straight and fast. make your route interesting and less stressful. That's what I would say. And in terms of planning, yeah, you have these trails and they are mapped and you can find them, but usually they're not going all the way from Cincinnati, right? You have to find connections as well. And I think in our days, there's a lot of options you can use, and like, you don't have to be in that place to see that place. You can use satellite images. And like, I mean, for example, if you see the road on satellite images and it has no markup, like no lanes, nothing, this is probably the last stressful road, right? And if you're not sure if you can pass that place and if it's like a private or not, sometimes it's really like, you're unable to tell for sure. You can use Google Street View, for example. And if that car that kind of carries that camera was able to pass that street, you probably can too, you know. But there's a lot of like tips and tricks you can use. And there are some apps you can use, like Ride with GPS and like even Google Maps navigation. They are helpful sometimes, but you also have to use your like experience and knowledge and kind of like, and also like don't make it direct, like find a way to, you know, to interesting places. And for example, I was planning our next adventure, which we are doing pretty much soon. And one of the days we were biking from Terre Haute, Indiana to Indianapolis. And there is a, like Route 40 that you can technically bike, you know, but this is not what you want to use. But also, if you detour a little bit on a north, you can hop on like 7 covered bridges and bike through them and stop at a few state parks with lakes and get some rest, get some water and all that
stuff. Have a little picnic.
Yeah. And that makes your route more interesting and less stressful.
That makes sense. Fraser, what are the most important things to do to check on your bike if you haven't ridden it for a while? And is it different if you're planning one of these big, long bike trips?
Yeah, excellent question, Lucy. So Vlad talked about stressful riding conditions, and I'm going to stress that being a nerdy engineer myself, we need to be careful. All of us have a variety of different bicycles. Know your bicycle. Most importantly, prepare for things. So stuff like Caitlin mentioned bags. Bags use racks to attach to the bicycle. The racks are held on there by a few small screws, and these are critical components on a bicycle any time of the day. But when you're on a 9-day trip, that importance goes up to top shelf. So, and that's just one example. There's a lot of stuff, there's a lot of complexity with bicycles, and you put them through different paces when you're doing these long trips because you're putting a lot more, probably twice as much weight on the bicycle. So stuff
because that, of all the stuff you're bringing?
Indeed, yes. So the stuff that can is very unlikely to break riding around town without bags on is one situation. But when you put all these weights on, you need to make sure that everything's dialed in nicely. Another thing that's of absolute critical importance is, and I have a lot of anecdotes on this, I won't bore you with them, but I've seen a lot of people prepare their logistics for a bike trip, but they don't necessarily pay attention to the bicycle, and or much worse, actually, they'll change something on the bicycle the day before. If you do that, if you must do that, and I understand why you might find something wrong with the bike, but please do yourself a favor and ride it a lot, as much as you can, before you actually set off on your trip, because something might not be quite right. Cables stretch, bolts come loose, bolts weren't even tightened in the first place, blah, blah, blah. Again, tons of anecdotes. But the thing is think about these things. Think about your bicycle and think about how many days it's got to last you. Consider taking a couple of spare spokes. Bicycles, some bicycles have all the same length spokes, some have different ones. Spokes are light and small and easy to carry. So carry some. Small nuts and bolts. It's a good idea to have a Ziploc bag of small nuts and bolts for brakes and stuff like that, critical components that whose bolts might fall out or might break. So that kind of stuff. There's a lot more thinking involved in preparing for a long trip in terms of the mechanics of the bicycle. So pay a lot of attention. If you must change stuff at the last minute, have it checked out thoroughly by someone who really knows this stuff. Mm-hmm. Do yourself a favor. Plan ahead.
There you go.
Yeah, and I just want to add, like, I've learned hard way that I have to carry a spoke on me. Yes.
You don't want to just be go without a spoke while you're going on a long ride. You have to have those spokes.
Yeah, and I was lucky enough that, like, there was actually that ride to Pittsburgh, and I was lucky enough that Pittsburgh has a lot of places that were open on that day we were there, and I just was able to get a spoke exactly my length, and this is, like, a lock. Because yeah. This is not something that happens naturally usually.
Okay.
Let me add one more snippet, if I may. So, where was I going to go with this? I lost my train of thought. Go ahead, Lucy.
Well, I'll just remind our listeners, we're talking about long-distance cycling and bike packing today, and we're getting tips on bike maintenance. Our experts are here to answer your questions for the full hour. So do you have questions or do you have tips for long-distance cycling that you'd like to share? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Fraser, did it come back to you?
Let me see if it's going to come back. Yes, again.
Spokes.
So, yes, spokes. Simple stuff breaks, complex stuff breaks, but a good tool in your box to have is thinking outside of the box. So if you do have a disaster you didn't prepare for, think outside the box as far as how to fix it. I'll give you an example. So you get a flat and you've got no more tubes and you don't have a repair kit. This sounds crazy, but it works. You can take the tire off the rim, stuff it with grass clippings or straw or anything, actually, mud if you like. Stuff it with something that's somewhat compressed. I'm not joking. And you can ride on that rascal for miles. It'll settle a little bit, and then you just stop and open the tire and stuff some more grass. I'm not joking. That works.
This is like MacGyver quality stuff, yeah, Fraser.
And we have faces in the studio here that are skeptical. thinking I'm talking crazy stuff, but you know what? That's what stops you from thinking of that. You know what? Think outside the box.
Yeah.
If you haven't tried it yet, you don't know if it works. Give it a shot.
Do you credit your engineering brain for coming up with this stuff?
Absolutely. You know, I'm a guy. I had a long and very enjoyable career in engineering, and I love fixing stuff fundamentally, but at the pinnacle of fixing stuff is MacGyvering. MacGyvering is where you take something, most of you know the MacGyver TV show. He would make something out of nothing to a ridiculous degree. You know what? It's actually, that's a good thing to try doing, and it's a good thought experiment, and every now and then you'll hit something that's like, oh my goodness, look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Sounds like a great tip. Well, we are going to continue this conversation after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about bikes for the full hour, long-distance cycling, and bike maintenance. My guests are Tri-State Trails Communication and Events Manager Caitlin Sparks, Mobo Volunteer Bike Mechanic Fraser Cunningham, and long-distance cyclists Vlad Golikoff and Barrett Smith. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Caitlin, I know you've been on some of these long bike rides with a couple of our guests here in the studio. What's the most ambitious cycling ride you've been on?
Yes, I'll say I think one of my first ones that really got me hooked, I rode from Eugene, Oregon to San Francisco.
Oh, I bet that was beautiful.
It was so beautiful. And that was like one of my favorite parts about it. It was just every day, my purpose being to like get on the bike and just have this romantic ride down the coast. That was really lovely. That was a 13-day trip, and we were camping each night. So that was like we were carrying a lot of equipment on the bike, riding with a group called the Adventure Cycling Association. So they tailor some tours for people of all sorts. Sometimes they'll carry your stuff, or this one was a fully supported self-supported tour. That one was really fun. I also enjoyed a solo tour that I did on the Ohio to Erie Trail. So that came with some maybe some nervousness to get started, just thinking like, I'm going to go and do this by myself, and had to be very self-sufficient, but had a great time doing that. And And it was nice to see Ohio. The trail is very approachable, very accessible to all sorts of riders, relatively flat and shaded. It's, yeah, really lovely.
Yeah. How long did that take?
I rode with a pretty quick speed. I was doing about 100 miles a day. So you don't have to do that kind of distance really in any bike tour. It's, you know, totally up to you. It can look different for every person. That's about how much time I had available. So yeah, I did it in about 4 days.
Wow. Yeah. Barrett, what do you, when you're going off, when you're starting to prepare to go off on one of these adventures with Vlad or Kate and Caitlin or whoever you're going off, or by yourself, what are the most important things you look for in your bike? Are there ways, you know, Fraser was just talking about maintenance, but are there things you're always certain to check on your bike? And is there ever a time that you didn't check it that you learned the hard way that, oh, I should have done this, like Vlad was talking about spokes?
Yeah, I think Fraser's advice of test riding is really key. I think when you ride a lot, you're familiar with how your bike should feel. And so just making sure you go out on plenty of test rides with your bike as you intend to travel with it. I also spend a lot of time thinking about how I'm going to pack my gear. If I want to carry pannier bags or on our most recent trip, I packed just like with a dry bag, like strapped down to the rack. So it was a little bit lighter and I could hang with Caitlin and Vlad, who were carrying a lot lighter gear and had a lot lighter setup. So I just kind of think through like my plan. I think through the food, like the snacks that I want to bring with me. And I make sure kind of everything's in working order. I think the times where I've run into trouble are where I, you know, didn't fully like check my gear as well as I should have. So one of the days to Pittsburgh, I had some trouble with shifting and that set us back probably half an hour while we were trying to fix that and just added to an even longer day. And on a recent ride, I was having trouble getting into the small chain ring, which you need to get up some hills. So Caitlin was stuck behind me a couple times where my chain just completely fell off and I was going up a hill and then was suddenly stopping. Pedals were turning, but wheels weren't getting any power. So.
Wow, your chain just completely falls off. How do you deal with that when you're in the middle of a ride? I mean, do you, do you make sure you know how to fix it yourself or you've got friends who can get it back on there?
Well, traveling with Vlad is always great because it's like having a bike mechanic along with for the tour. And I can do some stuff, but Vlad is, you know, a level above me. But with the chain problem, you just got to put it right back on. So gets your hands dirty, but
it's get back on that horse. Put that chain back on and
exactly.
Get back on that horse. We do have an email from Mike. Mike writes, I have a Giant brand street bike, which has been in storage hanging by its rims for the last 10 years. What maintenance needs to be done to make it roadworthy? Sounds like a question for you, Fraser.
That's a great question. If it's been in a cool room and dark, that's much better. If it's been in a hot garage with windows, that's probably the worst case scenario. And the vulnerabilities are many, but the main one is the tires. So anything that can dry rot, brake pads, tires, and possibly the saddle too, and even possibly the handlebar tape. The best thing to do with that is take it off the rack, pump up the tires, have a very close look at the tires and the brake pads. I like to use my thumbnail for these because what you want to do is make sure that the rubber's still pliable. So pump it up, look for cracking in the sidewalls and the tread of the tire. If it is cracked, it isn't necessarily a death sentence for the tire. Use your thumbnail and poke it in and then pull your thumbnail quickly out. If that indentation your thumbnail put in there heals quickly, bounces back, so to speak, that's a good sign. If you can see it for a few seconds, the rubber has probably lost some of its pliability, and that means two things. It won't grip as well, and it might split on the trail. So smart money there is just buy yourself some new tires and put them on, but don't do it the night before you set off on your trip. So any modifications to the bike, give yourself as much time as you can to ride it around and what have you. And while we're talking about the tires, if this is a road bike, this giant bike that you're describing, as in It's very skinny tires. And if you're going to put racks and add bags onto it and basically put another 40 plus pounds on it, those thin tires might not serve you so well. If there's room in the frame to put wider tires, especially if you've got to replace them anyway, wider tires are better for carrying load. It's as simple as that. If you pump up high pressure tires higher to manage weight, then they'll pop more easily, and they'll be less comfortable, and they won't absorb shock that the rest of the bike, including your body, will absorb, and anything delicate in your bags. Voluminous tires are your friend. They might not roll as quickly, so if you're a racer, temper that enthusiasm for speed and think about carrying load and make adjustments accordingly.
And so that's for if Mike wants to get the bike in shape to go for these longer distance rides. But if he's just going to be riding around town, are those thin tires okay?
They're fine. Thin tires are fine, yeah. And the other things, of course, are lubricate the chain, but also check the chain for stretch. There are special tools you can get to do this, but frankly, you can do it with a 6-inch ruler. If you measure from pin to pin on chains, they're an inch-based system, and go as far as you can on that ruler, and make sure that the pins are almost exactly on that 6-inch or 12-inch point. If they've gone past it and the chain has worn longer, which is what it does, if it's more than a millimeter in, if it's more than 3/4 of a millimeter in 6 inches, put a new chain on it. So stuff like that. Check the brake blocks, change them if you need to. Check the rim tracks and make sure that the rims aren't wearing down. If it's an older bike, rims do wear if they're aluminum. The brake blocks wear, but the rims also wear. So make sure they're not getting perilously thin. There's a big list of things to check on. If you don't know what to check, look it up or call someone like me. There are bicycle co-ops here and there. Mobo is in Northside. There are people there that know bikes. And if you want an inexpensive place to go to get the parts and the know-how, that's a good place to go to.
You gave such a good comprehensive list of things to check. For people who are less patient, how dangerous would it be to just take that bike down and just try to go ride it in the neighborhood? I mean, if you haven't ridden it for 10 years.
Yeah, that's kind of like rolling the dice, really. I mean, your life actually depends on your bicycle. I don't want to alarm anyone here, but we should be aware that we're sharing the road with lots of other vehicles and the sidewalks to bike paths and what have you. And so you don't want anything unexpected happening, because it could literally ruin your day and possibly someone else's too. So common sense should be telling you, yeah, don't do that. Check it out. If it's been sitting for a while, it's probably long odds, but do you want to roll those dice?
Yeah.
Check it out.
Makes sense. We're talking about bikes for the full hour today. Do you have tips for long distance cycling you'd like to share, or questions about bike maintenance? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Caitlin, you were just talking about how beautiful these rides have been that you've been on. What are some of the other things that, after a long distance ride, you thought, man, that really went right? Like, what did you, or maybe it went even better than you thought it might go?
Well, I will say, it's so fun to be in the studio with these guys here. Like, they're so fun to ride with. To hang out with and to hear their stories. And so having some good friends to ride with is super enjoyable. So having the right folks and it doesn't hurt that they know more about bike mechanics than I do and were able to help me out in a situation on our previous tour when we went up to Detroit recently. But yeah, I think having the right folks to ride with is always nice. But I did do a solo ride. So that was, I said I was like a little nervous to get started on that one, but super surprised by how kind everybody was along the route, stopping in like parks and just kind of catching up with people, folks seeing me with bags on the bike and curious what I was up to. Really kind people. Also meeting kind people in campsites who are excited about what I was doing, and cool to share stories with them. So, yeah, I think meeting people along the trail was a real highlight.
Yeah, this is really kind of cool part of it, actually. On our like longer trip to DC, we met a lot of people I was not expecting to meet. And this was really cool. Like, you just randomly stop at like the shelter or like to refill your water, and you meet other cyclists, and you like talk to them, and you just like, hey, it was one guy who was like biking from Chicago to New York, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's kind of cool. And you know like what people do, and you can share your approach, and you can kind of like talk to them. And he was like, yeah, I'm doing like 35 miles a day, and I'm camping. And we were like, how long you want to go? Like, how long is it going to take you? And he was like, oh, I'm retired. I have all time in my life. And this is really personally like dependent, right? You kind of like, we don't have that time, so we have to go like further, faster. But like, if you do have that, or if you have like a different bike, you can also do that. And also, like, it was a really fun story in Columbus. And we were biking in the morning, and there was a guy on the trail with us. And he had like huge panniers on his bike, like bigger than I had. And we were like, I assume that he's going on a longer trip as well, judging by the panniers. And like, I'm like casually just asking him like, hey, where are you going? And he's like, I'm just commuting to my work. and he saw our bikes, and he was like, hey, and where are you going? And we're like, we're going to Washington, D.C. And I was like, what? With those panniers?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
He goes, those aren't big enough to make it all the way to Washington, D.C.
Well, who knows what he had? I mean, what kind of work did he do? Who knows what he had to bring? Yeah. Like computers and who knows? I mean, you might have to bring a lot of stuff to work, but... How important is it, Barrett, to bring the bare minimum? I mean, you were talking about snacks. When snacks would be the most important thing for me personally, but snacks and water. But I mean, I imagine you really have to get good at packing light when you're going on a long distance.
Yeah, I think the key is really layering, especially our trip to Detroit. The forecast essentially the whole time was between 34 and 45 degrees with like 20 mile per hour winds, and being outside for 12 hours at a time, that it gets really cold. So you need like enough layers and kind of combinations of that to stay comfortable. So I think making sure you bring a variety of clothing that you can kind of mix and match, rain gear, especially you should plan to get caught in the rain at some point or another. Is really important. But I've also found I need less clothing than I thought I did going into it. You don't have to pack quite as many clothes. And I think I figured that out on our DC trip, because we were doing 110 miles a day to get to Pittsburgh. And I realized I have this clean shirt that I could change into. And I'm like, well, I'm going to be sweating through it, and it's going to be a dirty shirt in about an hour. And I turned to Vlad and I said, do you mind if I just wear the same like shirt from yesterday, even though it's kind of smelly? And Vlad just looks at me and goes, I'm not gonna hug you. You can wear whatever you want. and so that's been kind of a key. You don't need quite as much as you think you do. You want to have different combinations, things that can do different things, that you can pair together or use separately. But you don't need a lot of, you don't need like three of the same t-shirt or three of the same shorts. The exception would be like socks and underwear. You want to have fresh socks and fresh underwear.
Yes. But. Yes. Because that's what separates us from the animals, to have the fresh socks and underwear. Yes. You got to have those. Vlad, what about snacks? I know I keep talking about snacks, but are there favorites? Are there some that give you more energy on a long trip like this than others? I mean, I imagine that, a can of Pringles wouldn't do it.
I honestly have nothing against Pringles, but I think like our approach, and this is definitely depends on like the, it can be your approach, but what we do is like to be light, we try to have a multiple stops where you can eat. And this is also kind of cool and beneficial, because sometimes you can stop in like a smaller city in the middle of nowhere and just go to like local diner, which will have like a hand-drawn sign saying best gravy in town,
And that was really good. You did a good job with that best gravy in town. Well done.
Yeah.
So, okay, go ahead.
So that makes you lighter. Like, you don't necessarily have to carry food for the whole day. So you usually want to plan like a stop for lunch and maybe stop for coffee. I enjoy having a stop for coffee. Caffeine helps me to keep going. And so, but you have to have like a snacks just in case, maybe that place is going to be closed. So I usually bring like energy bars and something that is like, you know, weight to calorie ratio is good. You know, they are kind of compact, and also they are not like, they can sustain being in my bag on the sun the whole day, and they not, so like, do not bring chocolate in summer. You're gonna be like licking it out of the paper. And I mean, that's fine to do, yeah. But
yeah,
I don't know, like there are some like specific stuff like gels, you know, and they are like, they're like designed for like racing. You don't need to have that. They are expensive. They are like super small packages. Like I would say bring whatever you enjoy, whatever you like, and like plan two additional stops to like, just, you know, this is just fun to like visit other places. And also there are like, it's not like riding a desert, right? You can find a gas station and buy something, yeah, as well. So plan that. I would also recommend maybe electrolytes. That's a good solution. I usually bring like either a powdered or like a tablet, and I just mix them before, like on a stop. I just mix it with the water and like just drink it immediately. I don't want to like hold it in my water bottle for long, because that might leave like a taste on a bottle, mm-hmm, and that might also like affect the bottle, you know, it can kind of rot a, yeah, little bit, yeah. But that's a good solution, especially for summer riding, because you're losing your, it's the same as like running a marathon. You, mm-hmm, have to have like, you have to replenish your salts and all that stuff. That's a good thing. But also like any brand you like, sometimes like we had like one ride where one of my friends just brought pickles, and they're really good electrolytes, like pickle juice. This is the same thing. If you like that,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah. Do it. And that pickle breath is okay if you're not going to hug them anyway, right?
Sure.
Well, we have an email from Debbie who has a few questions. I'm going to read them all. Number one, best way to carry snacks and best snacks for a two-day trip. Number two, visibility suggestions, lights on helmet, flashing rear front safety vest. Number three, best way to keep phone and other electronics charged. And number four, where to get training for repairs on the road. So that's a lot. I don't know who wants to tackle
it. I can answer about the snacks carrying and phone charge.
Okay.
Because I found that's a really good way to do that is to have a top tube bag. It's like the bag that attaches on the top of your frame, and you have really good access to it while you're riding. You don't have to stop. You can just open it with your one hand, grab the snack, eat it, and you just like can't even not stop like to do that, you know. And also most of those bags, they're waterproof, like you can have a waterproof one, and they also can carry your battery pack. So if you have
for the phone,
I have a phone mount on my handlebar, and that's also kind of helps, especially when like if you've never been there and you have a route, you have to navigate, you have to see the navigation, like you put your phone on handlebars, and if you have the battery pack and that bag on your top tube, like it's relatively close and you can connect it and keep yourself charged. But sometimes it just like, you know, if you do a lunch stop, you just stop and just charge your phone while you're on the stop. That's usually more than enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about visibility? Caitlin, do you have suggestions for that?
Yeah, as visible as possible. So we're always riding with lights on the front and on the back. During the day, you maybe don't need that front light on, but I think we've rode with ours, at least the rear light on the solid red. And then, yeah, also wearing high-vis clothing, stuff that has reflective material on it is really important. And, you know, and we've mentioned that we're using trails and we're using some more rural roads that have less traffic on them, but still really great for, you know, all sorts of trail users and folks that are in automobiles to be able to see you. So, mm-hmm, yeah, as visible as possible, throw out the black clothing and get your pinks and yellows and greens out. Yeah.
Okay. And Fraser, what about where to get training for repairs on the road? Is that something Mobo provides?
Definitely. Yes. But also, if you don't know people who have bikepacked, talk to people who have bikepacked, and have them look at your bike and have them give you some ideas and advice on how to prepare your bike. Because, again, the duty of the bike is very, very different on a bikepacking trip than on a commute to work, for example. So yeah, lots more weight, lots more time, bigger jeopardy because you're in the middle of nowhere and it's not a question necessarily of pull your cell phone out and call for a ride that'll be there in 5 minutes, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Let me also say something about lighting. Those who know me know will tell you I'm lit up like a Christmas tree on my bike. I use a lot of lights. But a caution on using a headlight. A headlight is a good thing, except it's very easy to dazzle someone, and you don't want to dazzle a vehicle coming at you on a narrow road. It's not going to end well. So be careful where you put your lights. I love to put a light on my helmet for mountain biking, single track mountain biking. It's brilliant for that because you have a low light and a high light, and it fills in all the dark spots. If you're on a rails to trail type scenario, yes. But please try not to look at oncoming cyclists. Look away from them. Be respectful and just turn your eyes and turn your head away. Don't dazzle someone because it could literally cause an incident. And then one last comment on fueling. Vlad covered hydration and electrolytes very well. These sugary snacks are not all equal. So if you're going to buy gels, buy long sugar chain type, not the short chain, and read into that. I'm not going to bore you with the details, but basically the short chain sugar will give you a sugar spike. It gives you an instant rush and then you crash. Mm. Long chain sugars will last and endure for endurance. There's a very big difference in the different brands. Read up on it and don't get it wrong.
Okay. Well, we are going to be back to wrap up our bike show after a short break. If you have questions, now's the time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with the final leg of our bike show. My guests are Tri-State Trails Communication and Events Manager Caitlin Sparks, Mobo Volunteer Bike Mechanic Fraser Cunningham, and Long Distance Cyclists Vlad Golikoff and Barrett Smith. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Now, before the break, we were going through the questions that Debbie asked in her email. Vlad talked about the best way to carry snacks. She was also asking the best snacks for a two-day trip. Do you have suggestions about that, Caitlin?
Yes. So we have talked about these gels and electrolytes, and those are helpful because they're lightweight, and they, you know, they deliver a lot of necessary salts and nutrition. But I'm a big fan of just carrying some actual food that is not in a little plastic container or like a squeeze bag. I'll often pack a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, peanut butter is really good for you. I love having bananas, and I'm a big fan of carrying potatoes.
Like just a raw potato or a cooked potato?
I will cook the potatoes.
Okay, like,
yes.
Like a baked potato,
yes.
That's cooled.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really delicious. It's very satisfying. You can put some salt on it. They hold up well in a bike bag, which I think is helpful. Sometimes the PB&J can get a little mangled in a bike bag, but it still is delicious. Yeah, yeah. And gives you good sugars and some good proteins too.
Yeah, I think most of us have eaten a smushed PB&J from school lunches and things. They still eat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think any like dried fruits also works pretty well, like raisins, dates. You know, like dried apricots. This is really good solution and like really good replacement for energy bars because this is basically the same thing but more natural.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. What about water, Barrett? How much water should you bring? I mean, I imagine water can get heavy in a hurry if you're trying to bring all the water you're going to need for a long trip.
Definitely. I would recommend carrying as much water as you can comfortably. So I usually carry two bottles. When we were doing our trip to DC on the CNO trail, the availability of water is lower. So I brought like a bigger water bottle along with my two normal ones that I kind of just kept as like a reserve where if we, you know, couldn't get water where we were planning, we wouldn't be out of luck. So I would always advise bringing some electrolytes you can mix in and as much as you can ride with comfortably. And for most rides where you can stop and refill it, it's ounce bottles mm-hmm. would be the standard. So.
Yeah. What about you? I think you mentioned this briefly, Vlad, earlier, but then during the break, Fraser, you were talking about these kind of magical straws that you can bring. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So emergency supplies. Whatever you think you need, add some emergency supplies. So water, Barrett covered that. But if you're in a place where you don't know if you're going to have a reliable supply of water, you've got two choices. You can either carry a heck of a lot of weight, or you can carry a water purifier. You can get purification tablets. But my personal favorite and my wife's idea, not mine, is there's a device called the Straw, and it's just what it sounds. It looks like a fountain pen size. It's not any significant weight. You can put that thing in a murky, dirty puddle and suck the water out of that murky puddle if you've got the stomach to try it. And I'm not kidding. It tastes like spring water. It's amazing. Some of these small emergency devices are worth their weight and size volume to bring along with you. And another thing for emergencies, if you don't know where your next meal is and you'd rather not carry 25 pounds of food, get some, and both of these things you can get from a place like REI, the Straw and also the dried packet meals. The dried packet meal, you just need water. So with a straw and a dried packet meal, you can, and a heat source, you could actually mix it up and eat it cold if you need to, if you don't have a heat source, but you can feed yourself in the wilderness with stuff like this. It's a good idea to carry those things along. Choose the most compact designs and put them in a Ziploc bag and hope you don't need them. But if you do, you got them.
There you go. We did get a question from Sean who asks, do you have free resources for families who are new to riding? That I think that's a really good question. I'm also wondering if any of you have ever done these longer rides with children. But what about just resources for families who are new to riding? Anybody have thoughts on that? Is that?
I would say look for local group rides. And this is something that's becoming, dare I say, more fashionable. So there's a lot of suburbs in Cincinnati, Pleasant Ridge, where I live, Norwood, downtown. There are riding groups all over the place. It's a good idea to reach out to some of those, and if they don't accommodate kids riding, they'll probably be able to send you to a good place that can, stuff like that. Mobo has a kids' night program on Monday evenings that sometimes involves getting rides together. I stress sometimes, so not every Monday necessarily, but there'll be people there, other parents you can talk to about kids' rides and types of kids' bikes and stuff like that. And you can actually get free kids' bikes at that program too. So just look for local groups and reach out to them and see who knows who. Try network for help on stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'll just add that Tri-State Trails, we have a web page, the Get Involved page, with a list of local cycling groups, some of them that Fraser mentioned, and also Queen City Bike. They have a calendar that posts group rides, so you can get more information there.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Do any of you ever use an e-bike on a long trip, or does that feel like cheating to you?
Cheat.
Okay, he was pointing at me.
Glad you've used an e-bike.
I'm just kidding.
So I recently got a cargo bike, and it's really good. It's actually really good for if you have kids, because you can just hold them. If they're not comfortable to ride on their own, this can be something that for like really good solution for family riding. And I mean, that thing is heavy, and I just added like electric motor to it. But it's really depends. It's a little bit more of like complexity to what you have to think about, you know, because like the consumption, the battery capacity, you know, like the questions like, will I be able to recharge my battery? And like regenerative braking, you know, that adds some distance. There's a lot of like things to like dive in, but I like my setup was how I ride it. I just use pedal assist. So I would just say set it to minimum. Like don't ride it fast. The faster you go, the more consumption is. So you can go, if you aim for a long trip, just go slower. And workout. I mean, just like do not rely completely on the motor if you can. Like I prefer setting like 50-50, you know, it's like I still pedal. And like with that setup, with my huge cargo bike and a huge battery, I was able to squeeze 100 miles out of it. So that can kind of like...
You had to recharge the battery?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And also, if you do like a longer rides, make sure you have a design that has a swappable battery. That also helps a lot for a longer distance. So have a spare battery. And if you feel... And that can be kind of like emergency thing you can have as well. So if you know that your range is, okay, let's say 30 miles, right? When you're going on like 30-mile trip, don't do that. So have a spare battery or make your ride a little bit less than that. Turn around a little bit earlier. So make sure you have like a little bit of capacity if you're riding electric bikes. But he was pointing at me, but I do think that riding an electric bike is not a, like, you're not guilty of riding an electric bike. It's okay. Like
it still counts. It still counts.
Yeah, and like that makes. Makes bikes more, you know, accessible for people, especially like older people. And I love to see older people on trails, like riding electric bikes. They can still travel, you know. And that, I think there was like one of the articles I read. I might be wrong, but it was saying like riding an electric bike is still a workout. It still makes your heart like heart rate goes higher, and it's still beneficial for your health. So
yeah.
If you're unable to bike a regular bike, get yourself an e-bike. That's totally fine.
Okay.
Or even if you just want to ride an e-bike, it's not cheating.
It's not cheating.
The same studies have said people with e-bikes ride more than people with acoustic bikes. So, you know, all bikes are great. There's no cheating.
I had no idea it was an acoustic bike. I did not know that was the terminology.
And also, like, try to get a pedal assist bike, right? Like, try to pedal. Like, do not use throttle. This is not an approach for that. So, like, not buy a motorcycle, buy a bicycle.
Well, I've been talking with Tri-State Trails Communication and Events Manager Caitlin Sparks, Mobo Volunteer Bike Mechanic Fraser Cunningham, and Long Distance Cyclists Vlad Golikoff and Barrett Smith. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Yeah, thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy.
And you've been fun. Yeah, you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.